There is nothing to do in my town. If the internet had never been invented, I would have gotten stuck hanging out at the local coffee shop, desperate to fill my time. I have access to unlimited entertainment and information at my fingertips, and yet I still can't find answers about what happened last summer. I'm more of an indoor person. Somehow my friend Kenny dragged me along on a camping trip with his brother and my childhood friend. We all grew up together. Kenny's brother was 2 years older, so it felt like we never really connected. I didn't dislike him. We just didn't have anything in common. My best friend was the prettiest girl in the country, and I think she knew it. I had been in love with her since we were 13, but I'd never admitted it to her. I know the movement I did, our relationship would change. I was scared she might reject my feelings or accept them. Just being friends suits me just fine. The only way to get me outside was if Mila was going to be there. I think Kenny and Darren knew that. I refused to go on the camping trip. They asked Mila to come along, and they told me she would be with us. I hated how easily they played me. It was a hot day. All of us were sweating by the time we arrived at the campsite. "Can we set up the tents after?" Kenny said as he let all the bags drop from his shoulders. "No, let's get it done now or else we won't get to it on time," I told him, no matter how much I wanted to put it off. I knew him. The last trip he and his brother took, they were too lazy to set up the tents and just slept outside in their sleeping bags. They came home covered in bug bites. I didn't want a repeat of that. They both groaned and listened to me. Mila and I worked on one tent while the brothers set up the other. "There are only two tents," I pointed out. "We've shared tents before," she replied, not looking up. If she had, she would have seen how red my face got. At least I could blame the sunny weather for my flushed cheeks. Kenny decided to toss a full water bottle at Darren but missed. It hit me upside the back of my head, and I needed to go over to them to roughhouse for a little bit. Mile crossed her arms, amused by us. I got my ass handed to me, like always. As I got back up off the ground from the play fight, I noticed something white flash between the trees. I was about to mention it, but the color was gone as fast as I noticed it. We had picked a campsite that wasn't that popular with the locals, but that didn't mean there wasn't anyone else in the woods. We finally got the campsite set up, tents ready, food put away in case of any animals and firewood gathered. Once that was all set, we started to head down the path that led to the lake. We all earned a long swim. Kenny and Darren walked ahead of us, and I helped Mila down the rough pathway. "Should we really be camping right now?" Mila asked loud enough for Kenny to hear. "Wasn't there a big search recently?" "I heard a little about that," Kenny chimed in to explain what happened. "Four campers high on shrooms walked into the woods, and no one found any traces of them. It was 3 weeks ago, so I don't think we'll come across a feral lost camper," he said with a shrug. It was a bit heartless to imply those four were dead. He was right, though. Those four didn't have a good chance of still being around after dealing with this summer heat for 3 weeks. "Just in case, let's not go out in the woods alone tonight," I told them suddenly, feeling a chill even though I was sweating. "Is that your fetish? You like watching us pee?" Kenny teased. "I think he likes watching number two. No free shows," Darren added. "Kinda weird how fast you guys thought of that. Almost like it was on your mind," I replied. "I've dealt with these guys for years. I expected the dumbest things to come out of their mouth," Mila giggled at us. I wondered why she put up with three morons. The lake wasn't as cool as I hoped. The water was nice, and it did help with the heat, but I almost wished I was at home with the AC on full blast. Whenever I saw Mila in her black one-piece swimsuit and swim trunks, the thought of AC went out of my mind. I kept forcing my eyes away from her, so she didn't know how much of a creep I was. I really needed to get a grip on myself. "Hey, do you see that?" I asked Kenny when he swam over to me. He wrapped an arm around my neck to playfully drag me under, but stopped when I spoke. He followed my line of sight into the woods, trying to spot what I was staring at. "Is that a person?" he asked, squinting. Soon, Darren and Mila were looking in the same direction. A white shape was between two trees on the other side of the lake. It did look like a person, but it was impossible to tell at that distance. It was too still to be a person. And yet, it didn't sway in the breeze as if it was a discarded shirt or some trash. "Let's go and see," Kenny said as he let go of my neck. He started to swim away, and Mila came up next to me. "What do you think it is?" she asked. When I'd taken my eyes off the trees and to her, the white object moved. Kenny stopped swimming when he realized what we had been looking at was gone. "Probably some old pervert watching a tasty little thing swim around shirtless," Kenny said with a splash. "He's implying the old pervert is watching you." Darren finished with a smile. I slapped the water in his face. Soon the white shape had been forgotten about as we got into a water fight. I kept glancing back into the trees. The white shape didn't return, and I assumed it had been nothing after all. We started heading back to the campsite when the sky turned a slight orange. Kenny and Darren chanted the entire way back about the beans they were going to cook and eat. I was glad I was not sharing a tent with them tonight. When we did get back, they discovered that somehow, they left the bag that held the coveted beans back in the truck. Mila also forgot her socks and a few other things, so she wanted to go back with them. I didn't feel like walking, so I volunteered to stay behind to get the fire started. They had been gone for at least 5 minutes when I heard Kenny's voice again off in the distance. Oddly enough, it wasn't in the direction they left in. "Did you forget something?" I called out to him. His voice came again, but I couldn't make out the words. It was coming from the direction of the lake, but he would have needed to walk through the campsite to be on that path. I stood up, straining to listen. I called out his name and took a few steps closer to the pathway heading to the lake. "Kenny, stop fooling around," I shouted, my voice echoing through the trees. Did he take the long way around just to scare me? No, he hadn't been gone that long for him to be that far out. I took another step closer but stopped. This felt wrong. After those four people got lost in these woods, I decided I didn't want to go down a path alone. I went back to setting up the fire and getting dinner ready. If Kenny was playing a prank, he would get bored and come back. Oddly enough, my three friends came back together. "Did you see any other cars around?" I asked them, wondering if there had just been another camper out here that sounded like Kenny. "No, it's just us." "Why?" Mila asked, catching on. Something was bothering me. "I heard something while you guys were gone. It sounded human, but it's hard to say." Now I was doubting myself. Did that really sound like a voice, or was it too far away to tell? "Probably a bird. Some of those loons or whatever they are sound spooky," Darren said with a shrug. "He went out camping here pretty often." I accepted he knew what he was talking about and dismissed my concerns. We settled down to eat. The brothers gladly ate cans of beans as Mila and I stuck to hot dogs. The brothers also lit up an after-dinner treat. I didn't smoke, but Mila did on occasion. She passed that night. I think she didn't want to bring the smell into the shared tent. Kenny stood up to say he needed to use the washroom. It had gotten dark, so I found him a flashlight. I also needed to go. Then Darren stood up, deciding he should go with us. And Mila didn't want to be left alone, so we all gathered for a bathroom break. It was a bit hard to focus on the task at hand. Knowing Mila was so close by, I knew she had her back turned to us three as we took care of business, and yet it still took me the longest to finish. We scouted a good spot for her and gave Mila some privacy, but also kept scanning the trees in case a wild animal decided to suddenly appear. With all that taken care of, we were going to head back when an unnatural sound came from nearby, something I never expected to hear while in a forest at night. A few feet away from us came the sound of a baby crying. I saw Kenny's pale face in the light of my flashlight. Darren silently shook his head as Mila stood frozen in place. I took a step closer to the source of the sound, and Darren's hand fell on my shoulder. "Screw that," he whispered. I agreed and took a step back. "We should all just leave." Mila, bless her, didn't want to risk someone actually being in trouble. She bravely marched off into the woods with three guys going after her, whispering for us to get out of there. We followed her to the source of the sound. She stopped just outside a small clearing with someone sitting on a log. They were dressed in rags, with their backs facing us. The figure hunched over, rocking back and forth as they made shushing sounds. We didn't hear the baby crying anymore. This was freaky, downright nightmare fuel. "Are you all right?" Mila asked in a shaking voice. "My baby, my poor baby." The woman spoke, and she sounded so normal compared to how she looked. "We can call someone to get you some help," Mila offered. "My poor baby is starving." Slowly, the figure turned its head. The light caught a set of gray eyes that reflected in our flashlights. Stringy gray hair fell over a pale face. At first, the expression was blank, then the face transformed into something distorted and monstrous. Kenny and Darren were screaming before that creature stood up. They bolted, leaving Mila and me behind. I grabbed her wrist, forcing her to run as the pale creature screeched. It got on all fours to easily cross the cleaning to reach us. It jumped into the air, mouth open and bony clawed hands outwards. I pulled Mila out of the way in time. The monster crashed into a tree, then flipped around on the ground like a cat trying to right itself. We started running again. Mila's leg shook so much I ended up grabbing her around the waist to start dragging her. To my horror, the monster kept coming for us. I needed to fight back. I let go of her long enough to find a hefty stick to use as a weapon. That was a mistake, although I'm not sure if we had any chance of getting away unscathed. The pale creature came down on Mila, biting down hard on her hand. She screamed and kicked to get the thing away from her. I slammed the branch as hard as I could into the monster's face. It screeched and released my best friend. I kept hitting it, but I think I was just pissing it off. Just as it was about to go into a counterattack, a whistle came from somewhere. For some reason, the creature suddenly got on all fours, a look of distress on its face. It turned heel and darted back into the woods. To my horror, I saw another pale figure between the trees also take off running on all fours. I didn't care about the reason why they were leaving, only that we were safe for now. "How bad is it?" I asked Mila, turning all my attention to her. She shook her head, tears in her eyes. The bite wasn't as deep as I feared. We had a first aid kit back at camp. I took hold of her again to get us moving. I didn't hear Kenny or Darren, even though they left us behind. I hoped they were safe. "It'll be all right. We'll get out of here." "Do you have your phone?" I asked as we kept moving. Mila shook her head. I hadn't grabbed mine either. Sure, we were smart enough to go into a group, but we hadn't done anything intelligent after that. An odd whistling sound came through the trees. The strange melody chilled me to my core. Mila started to tug at my arm so we would walk away from the whistling. I glanced over her shoulder and saw flashes of white darting around the branches above us. As much as I hated the whistling, going in that direction seemed like the better option. Mila protested a little when I pulled on her arm to get us moving. I didn't want to scare her by telling her about the creatures stalking us in the trees. When I heard Kenny scream, I forgot about the threats we faced and ran in his direction. Hearing his voice was a good sign. I just hoped we reached him in time. We stumbled into another clearing. I raised the flashlight I somehow still held onto. The beam of light landed on a stranger's face. His left eye reflected the light, but his right eye didn't. His head was slightly titled, as if amused by our sudden appearance. My skin crawled, seeing such a pleased smile after the terrifying encounter beforehand. Kenny was on the ground, breathing heavily with the man's foot on his chest. My friend also had a bite taken out of his arm that was freely bleeding. For a moment, it appeared he had a bolt from a crossbow sticking out of his chest. I soon realized the bolt was stuck inside a pale monster beside him I didn't see at first. The stranger had a hunter's bow attached to his arm, loaded, and ready to shoot. "What did you do to Kenny, and where is Darren?" I demanded with a trembling voice. The man licked his lips and lifted his foot off Kenny's chest. He brushed strands of dirty brown hair from his face only to have it fall back. "I just saved this one from being a midnight snack, and I sent the other one down the trail. He might not reach the end of it alone, though," the stranger said, ending his sentence with a raspy laugh. He sounded as if he smoked a pack a day for most of his life. I didn't trust this guy. Mila tightened her grip on my arm, showing she felt the same way. Two of you got bitten tonight. Bites can turn people into those things. The infected ones won't be able to stand the whistling. After the man spoke, he started whistling in a way that didn't sound human. It was as if a songbird was trying to imitate a man-made instrument. I hadn't been bitten that night, and yet the noise put me on edge. Kenny recovered enough to scramble away from the stranger. Mila didn't react aside from appearing as nervous as she did when we first stumbled onto this scene. Finally, the man finished whistling and then studied us all very carefully. He raised the crossbow and rested it on his shoulder. "The trail is just past those trees. You kids better get going home." A weight had been lifted off my chest. Aside from some minor injuries and a few scares, we were free to leave. Kenny was the first to get up. His legs shook as he tried to walk towards where we had been directed. Mila and I walked past the man, feeling his eyes on us. All the stress from the night came back as he gave us an unseen, judging stare. I thought we were in the clear when a sharp whistle came again. It was so sudden I jumped. Mila did as well. I turned around to comfort her, and what I saw caused my entire world to come crumbling down. Her face changed. The person I'd cared for so deeply and for so long looked nothing like herself. In her shock, she dropped her mask to let a contorted version of herself show through. When she realized her cover had been blown, her mouth grew wide and was suddenly filled with countless sharp teeth. She wanted to take my head off, but a quick shot from the crossbow stopped her. A bolt went through her cheeks, shattering teeth. She screamed, thrashing around. Before the man shot her again, she ripped the bolt from her face and jumped backward. Mila landed on all fours, snarling with a bloody mouth towards us. To my horror, a ripping sound came as she sprouted massive bat-like wings. Her hands became claws, and her face transformed into something so far from human that I almost doubted she had once been the friend I cared about. In a flash, she launched into the treetops, joining the other white creatures that watched the scene at a distance. It took me a long time to realize the stranger started to drag me away. My brain was so numb from shock, I don't remember how long we walked on the trail or what anyone said to me most of the way back. I knew that man was whistling again. I snapped, wanting the noise to end. He stopped for a few minutes, then I realized the noise was the only thing keeping those creatures away. He playfully started back up again as Kenny and I kept our heads forward, trying to ignore the horrors in the trees. Darren was waiting for us at the end of the trail and outside of the forest. A lone police officer stood next to him, face as cold as steel. We stopped in front of them, unsure of what to say or how to explain ourselves. "Did you take care of the problem?" the officer asked, almost sounding annoyed. "Problems. And nope. Too many of them to deal with, and get these three out at the same time. I'm going back in to see what I can do. Sure do wish I had a friend coming with me," the stranger said with a loud, over-exaggerated sigh. I found my mouth opening to offer to go back to try and save Mila, but the cop stopped me. He saw three scared kids who would die if they tried to fight some monsters in a dark forest. "None of that. This is your job, not theirs. Now go and do it while I take care of my duties." The man shrugged again and pulled something out of his pocket. I expected it to be a pack of cigarettes, but he opened a small jar of dried cinnamon sticks. He tried offering one to Kenny, who refused. I reached out to take one, not to start chewing on like he did. But I needed something real from that night, or else my brain wouldn't believe what happened. "This one is bitten. Do you have anything for him?" the officer asked, and the stranger shook his head. Without warning, the cop pulled out a packaged syringe with some sort of clear mystery liquid inside. Kenny didn't protest the shot. The officer then reached into his back pocket to pull out three folded pieces of paper. "Sign these statements. The story is your friend got up in the middle of the night and got lost. We'll search for her tomorrow," the cop said and handed us a sheet of paper. Darren looked disgusted, but he signed his name. Kenny needed some prodding to do the same. I refused, and the officer glared daggers in my direction. "What if I tell a different story?" I threatened, ready to face whatever retaliation that might happen. "You can. I say it would be best for you mentally to get the real story out. But no one will believe you. As it is, people are going to assume you three did something to that girl. Don't make it harder on yourself." the stranger said as he rolled the cinnamon around between his teeth. I hated him. I hated myself, and I hated what happened. I signed the paper, and the officer told us to get inside his car so he could take us to the station. He made us repeat the same fake story a few dozen times. As we drove off, I looked out the back window to see the stranger giving us a sarcastic wave, and I saw the lights of the car being reflected by so many eyes watching in the trees. There was a search for Mila, but nothing turned up. People have whispered about what happened. None of it is even close to the truth. Kenny and Darren started to stay inside and away from accusing stares. I've heard they're not as close as they were before. I've started saving up as much as I can to move away. There is nothing left for me in this place aside from bad memories. I don't know if that man hunted down all the monsters lurking in the woods, and deep down, I hope he didn't kill the thing Mila turned into. Twisted or not, I wanted a part of her to live on, no matter how selfish it was. I need to leave this place. I found myself wanting to go back to those woods to try to find her, and that desire scared me. The real Mila would want me to live, and that is what I'm going to try to do. As the first rays of the sun cut through the thin curtains of my bedroom, I felt a mixture of excitement and apprehension. Today was the day I'd been planning for weeks, the day I'd step out of my routine and into the wilderness of the Ouachita National Forest. I'd camped before, as a kid, but those were carefree times, under the watchful eyes of my parents. This was different. I was going alone, as an adult, and I couldn't shake off a strange feeling, a premonition almost, that this trip would be unlike any other. I double-checked my gear laid out on the living room floor. Tent, sleeping bag, extra phone battery, enough food and water to last a week, and the 9mm my dad had given me when I turned 18. I'd never felt the need to use it, but out there, it seemed like a reasonable precaution. You can never be too careful, my dad's words echoed in my mind as I packed everything into the back of my SUV. The drive to Ouachita was a blend of familiar landscapes and the excitement of venturing into the unknown. With each mile, civilization seemed to recede, replaced by the raw beauty of nature. By the time I arrived, the sun was high, casting dappled light through the dense canopy of trees. I parked in a small clearing, a spot I knew I'd remember, and took a moment to breathe in the crisp air. "This is it," I whispered to myself, shouldering my backpack and stepping into the embrace of the forest. Setting up camp was both exhilarating and exhausting. I found a spot that seemed like it had been waiting for me, sheltered by trees yet with a view of the sky above. As I pitched my tent and gathered wood for a fire, I couldn't help but feel a sense of accomplishment. This was me, doing this on my own. I cooked lunch over the campfire, the simple food tasting like the finest meal in the solitude of the forest. I even managed to snap a few pictures of deer through the trees, their presence a silent affirmation of the life thriving in this secluded place. But as the afternoon wore on, an unsettling stillness began to take hold. The forest, so alive with the sounds of rustling leaves and distant animal calls, gradually fell silent. At first, I convinced myself it was natural, perhaps the ebb and flow of the forest's rhythms. But by late afternoon, the silence felt oppressive, as if the forest itself was holding its breath. I tried to shake off the feeling, even calling a friend to break the silence with human conversation. His laughter and the familiar sound of his voice were a temporary balm, but as we hung up and dusk approached, the unease returned, heavier than before. Night fell like a curtain, and with it, an inescapable feeling of isolation. I sat by the fire, staring into the flames, lost in thought. The excitement of the day had faded, replaced by a nagging sense that I was not alone. Not in the sense of a comforting presence, but an intrusive one, watching from the shadows. As I crawled into my tent, the 9mm by my side, I couldn't escape the feeling that this trip, this adventure I had so eagerly anticipated, was about to take a turn into the unknown. The last thought I had before sleep finally claimed me was a hope that the morning would bring back the forest's song, that the silence was just a fleeting shadow passing through the Wachita. The cold ground beneath me was unforgiving, but sleep had finally taken hold, albeit fitfully. My dreams were a maelstrom of shadows and sounds, blending with the reality of the forest that cradled me. It was a noise, distinct and out of place, that wrestled me from the grasp of uneasy slumber. My eyes snapped open to a world where moonlight was a scant visitor, filtered through the dense canopy above. The forest's silence, which had unnerved me earlier, was now shattered by an unnerving rhythm. Footsteps, if they could be called that, paced with a precision that felt almost methodical. Ba-da-da-dum, ba-da-da-dum. My heart raced, its beats trying to match the cadence of the unseen visitor. The 9mm, cold and solid in my grip, offered a whisper of comfort. I was no stranger to the woods, but this was a fear I hadn't known. The footsteps drew nearer, a deliberate taunt against the backdrop of silence. Then, as if aware of my heightened terror, they ceased. The silence returned, heavier than before, suffocating. My breaths were loud in my ears, a frantic symphony to the stillness. Then, without warning, the creature unleashed a screech that curdled my blood, a sound so alien it seemed to pull the very air from my lungs. Panic surged as the fabric of my tent tore open, revealing the night and the nightmare it hid. Its silhouette was a jagged line against the lesser darkness, its movements unnaturally fluid as it shredded the barrier between us. I fired blindly, the report of the gun shockingly loud, but it only served to anger the creature further. In a moment, fueled by fear and instinct, I made my decision to flee. The opening of my tent felt miles away as I scrambled, the creature's aggression focused on the fabric I had just escaped. The forest, once a haven, now felt like a labyrinth designed for my torment. I ran, branches clawing at me, the ground uneven beneath my feet. But the creature was relentless. Its pursuit was a rhythmic nightmare that echoed through the trees. Ba-da-da-dum, ba-da-da-dum. In a moment of desperation, or perhaps inspiration, I threw myself into a thicket, hoping beyond hope that stillness might save me. My body ached, my breaths were shallow heaves, but I dared not move. Then it appeared, lit by a moonbeam as if on a stage. Its form was a perversion of nature, emaciated and stretched, moving with an unsettling grace. When it stood, it was a mockery of a human silhouette, an abomination of the human form it mimicked. Our eyes met, and in that instant I knew true fear, not of death, but of being seen by such an entity, understood by it in some unfathomable way. Yet as quickly as our encounter began, it ended. The creature turned, leaving with the same unnerving rhythm it arrived with, leaving me to the dawn and the questions that would haunt me. As the sun rose, so did I, albeit as a man changed. The forest was alive again, indifferent to my ordeal. I packed what remained, my movements mechanical, driven by the desire to leave this place, to return to a world where such encounters were impossible. But as I drove away, the creature's gaze lingered, a reminder of the fragile veil between our world and those unknown. The Owashita had shown me something profound and terrifying, a secret I was not meant to see. And as I rejoined civilization, the forest's silence remained with me, a haunting melody to the inexplicable encounter that would forever color my nights beneath the open sky. It was 3:30 a.m., pitch dark and way too early for anyone to be awake. But there I was, lying in bed staring at the ceiling of my barracks room at Fort Bragg, North Carolina. My alarm had just blared, a harsh sound that seemed way louder in the quiet of the early morning. Today wasn't just any day, it was the start of a 2-week field training exercise. Something we in the military called the field. Honestly, I was one of the few who didn't dread it. Sure, we'd be cut off from cell phones, bars, and worst of all, showers. But it was a chance to get away from the monotony of daily duties and spend some time outdoors, even if it was in a heavily wooded training area. Dragging myself out of bed, I managed to get ready in record time. Last warm shower for 2 weeks? Check. A decent breakfast that didn't come from a mess hall? Double check. Living in the barracks had its perks sometimes, and being a short walk from where we had to muster was definitely one of them. When I arrived at the company area, a bunch of my fellow soldiers were already there, looking about as thrilled as kids on the way to the dentist. Some were practically asleep on their feet, others were downing energy drinks like water. I felt like an old man among them, even though I was only in my mid-20s. Most of these guys weren't even old enough to legally drink, but that never stopped them. We lined up to get our gear and weapons for the training. I felt a pang of sympathy for the guys stuck carrying the M249s. Those things were beasts. But soon enough, we were all kitted out and ready to go. Our platoon leader gave us a brief rundown of what was to come. Follow the vehicle ahead, watch for potential IEDs, and make sure to cover our sectors of fire. It was nothing I hadn't heard before. With a bit of luck, I ended up driving the lead Humvee with our platoon leader riding shotgun, issuing orders like he was born to do it. The drive to the training site took about an hour. We arrived at a secluded wooded area far from the base, our home for the next fortnight. Setting up camp took several hours, but by the time we finished, it felt like we'd accomplished something tangible. Tents were pitched, a firewatch roster was set up, and I drew the short straw for the 3 a.m. guard shift. Just my luck. Standing guard in the dead of night, I tried out the night vision goggles, NVGs handed to me by the previous watch. The woods came alive under the green glow of the NVGs, and for a moment, I felt a sense of peace. That is until I caught two privates sneaking off for a not-so-secret rendezvous. I chose to give them some privacy. After all, we were all adults here. But that sense of peace didn't last. As my shift dragged on, and I fought to stay awake, something caught my eye. A figure stood at the tree line, just watching. It was too far to make out any details, but the way it seemed to stare right back gave me the creeps. My wristwatch alarm went off suddenly, nearly giving me a heart attack. And just like that, the figure was gone. I tried to brush it off as my imagination running wild, but there was a part of me that couldn't shake the feeling of being watched. Reluctantly, I finished my shift and woke the next guard, then curled up in the back of my Humvee. Whatever it was, I didn't want to see it again. But as I drifted off to sleep, I couldn't help but wonder what lurked in the shadows of those woods. The next day, after what felt like only minutes of sleep, the sun was already peeking through the trees, announcing the start of a new day. With the previous night's creepy encounter still playing on my mind, I pushed it aside, convincing myself it was just the result of too little sleep and an overactive imagination. Today was about land navigation, something I was actually looking forward to. No lieutenants messing with maps meant we might actually stand a chance of finding our waypoints without getting hopelessly lost. Breakfast was quick, and then we were grouped into threes, handed our coordinates, and sent off into the woods. The dense canopy above us turned the morning light into a sort of perpetual twilight, and the untouched nature of the terrain made every step feel like stepping into the unknown. We were on the lookout for venomous snakes, as much as we were for our next waypoint. The first few coordinates led us deeper into the forest, and each time we found our mark, it felt like a small victory. But when we reached a coordinate that led us to a lone cone in the middle of nowhere, with a photo of a young soldier taped to it, things started to feel off. Who was this soldier, and why was his picture out here? It was a question none of us could answer, but I took a picture of it with my phone anyway, thinking it might make sense later. As the day wore on and the shadows grew longer, we realized we needed to head back before darkness made the woods an even more confusing labyrinth. I remember joking about not wanting to spend the night out there, but the humor was lost on me the moment Carrion, one of my group members, mentioned he thought we were being followed. Stopping in our tracks, we listened. There was a distinct sound of someone, or something, moving through the underbrush behind us. But when we stopped, it stopped too. That's when the real fear set in. Was it just some drill sergeant playing mind games, or was it something else? we decided against running. It could provoke whatever was out there if it turned out to be more than just a human prankster. Pushing forward, every rustle of leaves had us on edge. I kept thinking about those horror movies where you scream at the characters to do the smart thing. Now I was in one of those movies, and there didn't seem to be any smart option available. When we were about a mile from camp, that's when it decided to make its move. Something darted across our path so fast I barely caught a glimpse. But it was enough. Enough to see its eyes reflecting in the flashlight. Enough to see it wasn't human. The forest around us erupted into chaos as we saw more of them, eyes glowing, watching us from the darkness. Diaz, another member of our trio, pointed his flashlight at a tree, revealing one of those things clinging to it, smiling that grotesque smile. That's when panic took over. The sound of a gunshot ripped through the air as we turned and ran, not caring about the noise or the direction, only wanting to get away. I don't remember much about the run back. My lungs burned, my gear felt like it weighed a ton, and the forest seemed to close in around us. We were no longer soldiers on training. We were prey, running for our lives. I fired my weapon into the darkness, knowing it was useless, hearing screams that I couldn't place as human or otherwise. Somehow I made it back to camp, alone and out of breath, with no sign of Diaz or carry-on. What happened out there, I couldn't fully explain. But the looks on the faces of my fellow soldiers as they saw me, covered in blood and rambling about creatures in the woods, told me everything I needed to know. They thought I had lost my mind, and maybe I had, but not in the way they believed. Waking up in camp, the morning light did little to ease the horror of the previous night. I was covered in blood, my heart was racing, and Diaz and Carrion were nowhere to be found. The camp was in chaos, with soldiers looking at me like I was a ghost, or worse, a monster. I tried to explain, to tell them about the creatures in the woods, but the words wouldn't come out right. It was like trying to describe a nightmare while still dreaming it. Before I could even attempt to make sense, I was grabbed, questioned, and then quickly restrained. My platoon leader looked at me with eyes full of anger and fear. His questions were sharp, demanding to know what had happened to Diaz and Carrion. I tried to tell him, tried to warn him about the creatures, but it only made things worse. The disbelief in his eyes turned to rage, and then to violence. I was left alone, tied up, wondering if I was the only one who knew the truth, and if that truth would even matter. Time passed slowly in that makeshift prison. My thoughts were a jumbled mess of fear, confusion, and an overwhelming sense of dread. They sent another search party out, despite my warnings. I knew it was a mistake, but there was nothing I could do. When the platoon leader finally came back, the look on his face said it all. The static from the radio, the absence of any response, the distant gunfire. It was happening again, and this time, they couldn't deny it. They cut me loose, but it wasn't out of trust or understanding. It was out of necessity. The camp was under attack, and every able body was needed. I grabbed a pair of night vision goggles and looked out into the night. There they were, the creatures, attacking my friends, my comrades. It was a scene straight out of a horror movie, only this was real, and the fear was paralyzing. I crawled to a Humvee, desperate to escape, to survive. The engine roared to life, and for a moment I thought I might make it. But then, tapping on the window, one of those things was smiling at me, its mouth stained with blood. In that moment, I knew I couldn't hesitate. I floored it, driving over anything in my path, driven by a mix of fear and determination. The drive back to base was a blur. When I finally stopped, I was greeted not with relief, but with suspicion. Arrested and thrown into the brig, I was left to ponder the nightmare that had unfolded. It was only after what seemed like an eternity that they released me, the investigation into the events somehow corroborating my story, or at least enough of it to prove I wasn't at fault. I was medically discharged, a pension and a ticket away from Fort Bragg, away from the woods that held horrors no one should ever face. I moved as far as I could, trying to put distance between myself and the memories. But some nights I can still see those eyes, hear the tapping on the window, and feel the fear that nearly consumed me. It was over, or so I hoped. But deep down, I knew those woods still held secrets, and the creatures within were far from imaginary. My only solace was the hope that no one else would have to face them. But in the quiet of the night, I couldn't help but wonder if the nightmare was truly over. I've always felt a kinship with the untamed landscapes that stretch far beyond the confines of our everyday lives. There's something about the raw, unfiltered beauty of nature that speaks to me, calls to me, in a way that nothing else does. It's a bond I share with my girlfriend, an invisible thread that ties us together, drawing us out into the wilderness time and time again. On a foggy Friday, with the weekend yawning open before us, devoid of plans or obligations, she suggested we go camping. The idea struck a chord in me, resonating with my deep-seated need to escape the trappings of our mundane existence. We decided on a forest an hour's drive from our place, a spot we hadn't explored yet, but had heard was a hiker's paradise. Lacking a car, we embarked on foot, our journey taking us through landscapes that transitioned from the familiar to the increasingly remote. The trek, lasting between 2.5 to 3 hours, tested our resolve, but also reinforced our connection, not just to each other, but to the world around us. As we stepped into the forest, the sun dipped low on the horizon, painting the sky in hues of fire and gold. The beauty of the scene was breathtaking, a perfect welcome to what promised to be a sanctuary from the chaos of our daily routines. We hiked, lost in the tranquility of our surroundings, our conversation flowing as easily as the wind through the trees. But then, a ripple of unease. My girlfriend, always more attuned to the nuances of our surroundings than I, mentioned seeing something. A presence, she said, watching from the shadows between the trees. I tried to see what she saw, peering into the dense underbrush, but found nothing. I chalked it up to her imagination, her anxiety painting phantoms where there were none. Her steps grew closer to mine, seeking reassurance in my proximity. I wrapped an arm around her, pulling her close, and for a moment the unease dissipated, swallowed by the forest's serene embrace. We stumbled upon a clearing as if by design, a secluded haven deep within the heart of the woods. It was as if the forest itself had carved out a space just for us, with fallen trees lying in a rough square that beckoned us to set up camp. This was our spot, our temporary home away from home, surrounded by the unspoiled beauty of nature. We pitched our tent with practiced ease, transforming the clearing into a cozy retreat. As twilight deepened into night, we lit a fire, its warm glow a beacon against the encroaching darkness. We cooked, ate, and talked, our conversation meandering through topics dark and light. We spoke of mysteries unsolved and tales macabre, our voices mingling with the crackle of the fire and the whisper of the wind through the trees. It was late when we decided to turn in, the night wrapping the forest in a blanket of stars. Our sleeping bags were a promise of comfort in the chill of the night, our tent a shield against the wild. As I drifted off to sleep, I felt a profound sense of peace, a belief that in this moment, all was right in the world. Little did I know, the darkness held secrets, and our sanctuary was not as safe as we believed. The true nature of the wild, unforgiving and unpredictable, was about to reveal itself, changing our lives forever. The night was a living thing, breathing and whispering around our tent, a cocoon nestled in the heart of the wilderness. It was in these quiet hours, with the fire reduced to embers and the forest a shadowy realm beyond our canvas walls, that reality began to shift, imperceptibly at first, then with alarming clarity. It started with a simple act, so mundane that in any other context, it would have been forgettable. My girlfriend, her voice tinged with an emotion I couldn't quite place, whispered that she needed a bathroom break. There was a fragility in her tone, a vulnerability that was rare for her. My concern spiked, manifesting as a knot in my gut. "Are you all right?" I asked, my voice low, attempting to mask my sudden anxiety. "Yeah, I'm fine," she replied, though her voice betrayed her. She left the tent, a silhouette against the faint glow of our dying fire, and as the zipper closed behind her, a chill ran down my spine, an instinctual warning that something was amiss. Minutes stretched into eternity. The forest's nocturnal chorus played on, indifferent to my growing unease. 15 minutes passed, then 20. It was too long, far too long for her to be gone. I called out, my voice swallowed by the vastness of the night, receiving no response but the rustling of leaves and the distant call of a night bird. Panic, sharp and unyielding, propelled me out of the tent. Flashlight in hand, I scanned the darkness, the beam of light a feeble attempt to pierce the overwhelming black. A whimper, so faint I thought I imagined it, guided me deeper into the woods, away from the safety of our camp. And then I saw her. The flashlight fell from my hand, its light landing on a scene so horrific that for a moment my mind refused to comprehend it. Suspended from a tree, her body was a testament to an unspeakable violence. Half of her face was gone, torn away by... what? My mind reeled, trying to make sense of the impossible. Her last words to me were a whisper, a plea laced with love, and a warning I couldn't understand. Stay away from the cave in the distance. And then she was gone, her body going limp, leaving me alone in the night with my grief and a growing terror. The cave, the mention of it ignited a curiosity, a need to understand, to find the source of this nightmare. My heart pounded as I approached, driven by a mix of dread and an inexplicable pull towards the dark maw in the earth. What I found was a creature from a nightmare, a being so grotesque and otherworldly that my mind struggled to accept its reality. It spoke, its voice a mockery of human speech, taunting me with my ignorance, my failure to protect her, to believe her fears. I couldn't stay, couldn't bear the weight of its gaze or the truth in its words. I fled, stumbling through the dark, the forest now a labyrinth of shadows and fear. Behind me, the creature laughed, a sound that would haunt me for the rest of my days. The escape was a blur of terror and adrenaline, the forest a hostile entity intent on my demise. But I emerged, broken and alone, back into a world that seemed alien to me now. I had survived, but at what cost? The night had unraveled, taking with it the illusion of safety, of sanity. What remained was a shattered reality, a life irrevocably changed by the horrors that lurked in the unseen depths of the wild. Dawn broke with a cruelty that morning, its light a stark contrast to the darkness that had consumed my world. The forest, once a place of refuge and beauty, now felt like a prison, its trees standing like silent witnesses to the horror of the night before. My escape from that nightmare, driven by primal fear and the instinct to survive, was a blur, a frenzied dash through the underbrush, every shadow a potential threat, every sound a possible harbinger of death. The creature's taunts echoed in my mind, a constant reminder of my failure, of the price of disbelief. "I'll find you someday," it had shouted, its voice a chilling promise of fear without end. "You can join that stupid woman of yours in the futile void we call death." The words were a poison, seeping into my soul, leaving me with a terror that I knew would never fully dissipate. Somehow, I made it to the road, my body moving on autopilot, driven by a deep-seated need to return to a semblance of normalcy, to a world where such monsters couldn't possibly exist. I hitchhiked back to civilization, my story pouring out in a disjointed flood to the stranger who had offered me a ride. To my surprise, there was no skepticism in his eyes, only a deep, unsettling understanding. Back in the realm of the living, the reality of what had happened hit me with the force of a physical blow. I was alone, truly alone, in a way I had never been before. My girlfriend, my love, my partner in every adventure, was gone, taken by a horror that defied explanation. I told my story again and again to anyone who would listen, to the police, to friends, to anyone. The reactions were mixed, ranging from disbelief to horror, but a surprising number of people believed me. It turned out there were legends about the forest. Tales of a creature that lurked in the shadows, preying on the unwary. These stories, once just that, stories, now felt like grim warnings ignored at our peril. The days turned into weeks, then months, but the terror of that night remained, a constant shadow that followed me. Sleep was elusive, each night a battle against the memories that surged forth the moment I closed my eyes. And sometimes, in the darkest hours before dawn, I would see it. The outline of a figure, hunched and grotesque, lurking in the corners of my room, drawing closer with each passing night. The guilt was a relentless companion, gnawing at me with the relentless persistence of a carrion eater. I could have prevented it all, could have saved her, if only I had believed, if only I had listened. That realization was a weight that I knew I would carry for the rest of my days. The forest, once a place of escape and joy, now represented something else entirely, a reminder of the fragility of life, of the thin veneer of safety that separates us from the darkness that lies in wait. I had sought solace in the wild, only to find a nightmare that would forever haunt my dreams. As I moved through the motions of life, a shell of my former self, I couldn't shake the feeling that the creature's eyes were still on me, watching, waiting. The wilderness had called, and we had answered, not knowing that some calls are better left unanswered. The wild had revealed its true nature, unforgiving, unpredictable, a reminder that for all our advancements, we are still at the mercy of forces beyond our understanding, beyond our control. I ain't scared of nothing. That's what I told my brother, loud enough for the whole street to hear, as I slammed my car door shut. I remember his smirk, holding out my jacket like a white flag, listing all the things I should fear. Skinwalkers, witches, werewolves, straight out of a horror movie. He thought he could scare me, make me back down. I rolled my eyes, snatched my jacket and yelled back, "I'm not scared," before driving off. The mountains ahead, with their jagged outlines against the setting sun, looked like giant teeth ready to swallow me whole. I wish I'd listened to him. It all started a couple of days ago. Depression had become my shadow. It followed me everywhere, whispering thoughts of jumping off bridges or stepping in front of cars. I was tired of fighting it. One of my friends, probably tired of my gloom, suggested I try solo camping. "It's peaceful," he said. "The wilderness, the silence, it helps." He gave me a list of places, but my eyes were drawn to the most isolated spot. 3 hours hike from the last campsite in the Rocky Mountain National Forest. "You sure?" he asked, disbelief clear in his voice. I nodded, too exhausted to argue. "Just don't go out at night," he warned. "You might not like what you find." The drive was surprisingly calming. The road snaked through the forest, the trees a blur of green and brown. I decided then to leave my phone locked in my glove box. This trip was about disconnecting, finding peace away from the noise. I planned to be out for 5 days. Surely that was enough time to clear my head, to figure things out. Estes Park was my last glimpse of civilization. I drove through, resisting the urge to stop and book a room at the Stanley Hotel. The park entrance loomed ahead, and I drove in, feeling like I was crossing into another world. As night began to fall, I regretted leaving so late. The last thing I wanted was to hike in the dark. I found a parking lot with a few tents set up. "Just for tonight," I promised myself, setting up my own tent among strangers who soon became temporary friends. We shared food and stories, their laughter, the kids playing, it all felt so normal, so comforting. Wrapped in my sleeping bag, I fell asleep to the sound of their voices, the crackling fire, and the faint rustle of the trees. That night was the last bit of peace I'd have. If I had known what awaited me in the depths of those woods, I would have turned my car around and driven straight home, but I was determined, stubbornly clinging to the belief that I wasn't scared of anything. How wrong I was. Waking up in that parking lot felt like waking up from the last good dream I'd have for a while. I packed up my tent, said goodbye to the temporary friends I'd made, and set off towards my real destination. The deeper into the forest I walked, the heavier my heart felt. It was like each step was a step further away from the world I knew, and deeper into a silence that was too quiet. I remember thinking, "It's just trees, right? Just nature." But man, was I wrong. The trees felt like they were watching me, moving with me. Every noise made me jump. The isolation I thought I wanted now felt like a heavy blanket, suffocating and too warm. I got lost. A lot. What was supposed to be a 3-hour hike turned into nearly 6 hours of me cursing, sweating, and regretting every choice that led me to this moment. When I finally found the campsite, the sun was already saying goodbye. I hastily set up my tent, my hands shaking, not from the cold, but from a fear I couldn't quite name. As darkness swallowed the forest, every sound seemed louder. A branch snapping made me think of a horror movie jump scare. I told myself it was just animals, just the wind. But the comfort of those thoughts was thin and fragile. I crawled into my tent, hoping sleep would take me away from the creeping dread. It was a foolish hope. The night was restless, filled with sounds that seemed too deliberate, too close. Footsteps circled my tent, and I lay there, frozen, too scared to even breathe loudly. My imagination turned shadows into monsters, and the rustling leaves into whispers. I tried to convince myself it was all in my head, that I was just not used to the wilderness. But then, there was the unmistakable sound of something, or someone, brushing against my tent. My heart raced, and all the bravado I had claimed as my own melted away into the darkness. I was scared. No, I was terrified. The reality of my isolation hit me then. There was no one to call for help. No one to hear me scream. I was utterly alone with whatever lurked just beyond the thin fabric of my tent. The night dragged on, an endless loop of fear and brief moments of exhausted dozing. When dawn finally broke, it felt like a reprieve, a stay of execution. But the relief was short-lived. The day brought its own challenges, its own fears, and as the sun set again, I knew the night would only bring more terror. That second night in the wilderness broke something in me. Every sound was a threat, every shadow a demon. I realized then that the solitude I thought would heal me was actually a mirror, reflecting back my deepest fears. I was lost in a forest of my own making, and the way out seemed just as inscrutable as the way in. The darkness wasn't just around me. It was inside me, and I didn't know how to escape it. That third night, I didn't just cross the line into fear. I dove headfirst into a nightmare. Sitting in my tent, the darkness outside felt like a living, breathing thing, waiting to swallow me whole. My mind raced with every horror story I'd ever heard, each sound outside a confirmation that the worst was about to happen. The fire I'd managed to keep alive flickered like the last heartbeat of hope in my chest. I told myself to be rational, that it was just animals or the wind. But deep down, I knew it wasn't. The footsteps returned, but this time they were joined by others, a chorus of whispers and laughter that seemed to mock my terror. Then it happened. The side of my tent was pushed in, as if something wanted to break through. My scream was lost in the vastness of the forest. In a moment of panic and madness, I unzipped the tent and looked outside. What I saw will haunt me forever. A figure, resembling me but twisted into something grotesque, with eyes like empty voids. I ran. The forest around me turned into a blur of shadows and fear. I could hear it behind me, its footsteps mirroring mine, a grotesque echo of my own terror. The trees seemed to reach out, their branches like hands trying to drag me back into the darkness. I didn't know where I was going. I just knew I had to keep moving. When I crashed into something solid and warm, I thought it was the end. But it wasn't a monster. It was a man claiming to be a park ranger, yet nothing about him fit the bill. His suit was too clean, his shoes too polished for someone who'd been in the forest. But in that moment, I didn't care. He was my escape from the nightmare. We drove in silence, his SUV cutting through the night like a beacon of hope. When we finally stopped, the light of dawn was just touching the horizon. He handed me a card with just a number on it. No name, no title. Just a lifeline I wasn't sure I'd ever use. After he drove off, leaving me alone with the rising sun, I couldn't shake the feeling of dread. What had I seen? Was it real, or just a product of my fear-soaked mind? And the man who claimed to be a ranger, who was he really? I drove away from the mountains as fast as I could, vowing never to return. The wilderness, once a place of beauty and wonder, now held only terror and unanswered questions. My friends noticed the change in me, but how could I explain? How do you tell someone you were chased by your own twisted reflection, or that you might have encountered something supernatural? Sometimes, I pull out the card the man gave me, wondering if I should call, if I should seek answers. But then I remember the laughter in the darkness, the eyes that mirrored my own but held only malice. And I realize some things are better left unexplored. I've changed. The forest changed me. It showed me fear in its purest form, and now every shadow, every whisper of wind, brings me back to that night. I don't know if I'll ever truly escape it. Maybe we carry our forests with us, the darkness that whispers our name with a voice too much like our own.